Welcome back, everyone. It's so nice to see you all. I want to tell you what the evening will look like. We'll start with a very short sit just to arrive. Then we'll have a check-in, and you can share how your week of practice went. It's always nice to hear from each other. It helps us connect. Then at about 7:20, Lyndall will give a brief introduction to mindfulness of breathing with the mind. After that, she'll lead a guided meditation, which will start at the beginning, reviewing all the instructions, beginning with mindfulness of breathing with the body and mindfulness of breathing with feelings, and finishing with the body with mindfulness of breathing with the mind. After the guided meditation, which will be about 40 minutes long, there will be a time to discuss tonight's meditation and ask questions, and we'll close at 8:30. So, first, let's take a moment to arrive and settle before we check in. So make yourself comfortable. Get settled in a way that works for you. Maybe take a few deep breaths, releasing any tension in the body you might be noticing. Let go of any thoughts that might be distracting you from being here in the present right now. So we'll take a pause, maybe about 2 minutes of silence before we begin the program. And I'll ring the bell in 2 minutes. Okay, so we have some time to share now about how the week went for you with your practice. You can talk about your practice on or off the cushion. What did you notice as you practice with mindfulness of breathing with the body and mindfulness of breathing with feelings this week? Did you notice things that were easy or difficult? Did you notice any differences in this week's practice compared to last week's practice? What are you learning about your mind? What are some of the things you might be wondering? So it's really nice to share. Thank you, Shashi, for raising your hand. Let me find you here. Great, go ahead, Shashi.
I found this week's practice a lot more difficult because it seemed like going, the first part, the first tetrad of following your breath, the long breath, the short breath, the full body, and then the calming the body was a lot more easy, while the second part seemed the differences, the distinctions between joy and happiness, and then, moving on to feeling tones. It almost seemed like I had to make these things up in my mind, what they were, and then calm them. So I think so. Definitely, I didn't have enough clarity between the differences between joy and happiness and going on to feeling tones, etc.
Yeah, I can understand that. And this was, it's not meant to be practiced this quickly. So that is not surprising. And probably you've had a lot of experience with breathing with the body too. So it's familiar. So
Yes.
yeah, it's ongoing, isn't it? But
Yeah.
you can take one step at a time and you can go back to,
Okay.
yeah, in actual practice over time. Thank you for bringing that up. Judith, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I found the calming, the mind part actually worked pretty well. But I am convinced that I will get to the end of this year and I will not be able to tell the difference between joy and happiness and tranquility. So I mean, we talk about it and say, well, joy is this, and but when I'm actually trying to experience it, I don't know. I mean, it feels good, right? But is this joy? Is this happiness? I don't know. I don't know. I'm, yeah. So I guess I would have a similar comment to Shashi's.
Yeah, I think that I would say the same thing because really it is something that is, a sequence, so it unfolds. So if you were doing it over time, and also discernment about differences is also something that happens over time with staying the continuity, like just staying with feeling, staying with feeling, staying with feeling. The idea is that staying with it over time, it unfolds and you start noticing differences that you didn't before. Because there's a reason, this is my thought, there's a reason the Buddha, said, well, there's joy and there's happiness. Or there's contentment and there's rapture. He distinguished it. So I don't know the answer, but I think it's good to be curious about, are there differences in these feeling tones? Is there a reason why there would be a different kind of joy in one situation than in another? So that's.
I rapture is I that I can tell, that one seems more distinct, but I wonder if the in the Pali words, if there's more of a contrast between the Pali word for joy and the one for happiness, for example.
I think we're also running into the English translation.
Yeah, right. That's what I mean, that when we're talking about the English words, there isn't that much difference, but in the Pali words, there may be.
And different translators, different teachers that teach this, they use different words.
Right.
Like one teacher will use pleasant for joy or happiness, and another teacher will use contentment.
Right.
So I guess just to be curious about, are there different shades and is there a reason, you know? I mean, that's my thought. What do you think, Lyndall? Do you want to add anything to the?
I feel like they definitely are different. I mean, like rapture is very different feeling than the just kind of pleasant contentment. But I also know that just if I'm just doing a daily sitting, you know, for a half hour or 40 minutes, I might not be able to detect all those nuances of feeling, you know. If they might not all come up, you know, there might just be sort of a feeling of calmness, and it never really goes into what I would call rapture. And so some of it is just having enough time to actually have all these different feelings show up, which we might not, like in 30 minutes or something.
Thank you. Yeah. Suze.
I have a question about that. I was wondering, too, if just the differences in who we are and our temperament and inclination and conditioning, and some of us have easier access to the more energetic experiences and some less. I wonder what the two of you think about that.
It could be. It could be.
Yeah, I would tend to think that would be true because, you know, some of us lean towards, like I really lean towards calm. So it's kind of like there's a Vedana for a Vedana. And so I think, oh, yeah, that's pleasing, the calm. And so I might, you know, I frame it, I perceive it one way, and someone else might not find calm or tranquility not so exciting enough or not so pleasant. So there might be a different way of I think that's part of what we're supposed to be looking into, is kind of, you know, how does pleasant and unpleasant and contentment and joy and rapture, where's the bias from our perspective too, including that. Dragon Yogi, go ahead.
Gratitude, compassion, and appreciation. Thank you, Sangha and teachers. What about Vedana for all the sense doors?
Yeah. There's Vedana. Well, I was reading the Buddhadasa book, and he was saying that the Vedana affects everything. It affects every aspect. It's so important. And he said it was the most important thing to understand was the Vedana, the feeling tones, because they affect everything else.
All the sense doors.
Yeah.
Have a Vedana.
Yeah.
And all we have is sense doors. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a feeling tone to what we hear, see, smell, taste, yeah. Touch, and think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, excuse me. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
I was going to say, in these instructions, it seems like the emphasis is on that pleasant Vedana, you know, because it talks about noticing rapture and pleasantness. But yet, as you say, Dragon Yogi, all of them, all of our sense doors, everything we experience has it, and noticing all of them is really important.
And I think the practice is the depth of how deep we feel those different.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the depth of the feeling tone is of the Vedana is how deep we feel.
Yes.
It's the same thing with the Metta and Karuna. It's how deep we feel them.
Yes.
Turns them into the next phase of of everything. For me, anyway, that's the way it's been working. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. for sharing that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, although I haven't experienced it all. It's to me that makes a lot of sense to. Yeah, don't write off those Vedanas.
Excuse me, it's also the first thing. We don't realize it, but it's the first thing. Whenever there's phenomenon, we don't realize that we feel first, the body first. We think it's the mind first.
Yeah.
But that feeling tongue comes up.
Yeah.
Pretty quick.
Yeah, it's very quick. Very quick. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else want to say anything before we go into our practice tonight? Okay. Thank you, everyone. So, Lyndall? Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, everyone, for sharing. This is such an interesting process, working with these. I think that those of us who are teaching it, we're really enjoying it because we're learning as much as you guys are, I'm sure. So this week we're going to be working with the third tetrad of the Anapanasati Sutta, and this is the one that has to do with mindfulness of mind or breathing with the mind. And as I think as we move along with this tetrad and the one that follows, we can sort of begin to see why the Buddha taught this method to his more experienced disciples, because the instructions really get more subtle, I think, as we move along. So the instructions for breathing with the mind, they have four parts. And the first one is to be sensitive to the mind, to let ourselves experience the mind as we breathe in and out. And so this means that we're aware of our state of mind or our attitude of mind and the different activities of mind. If there's craving, we know it. If the mind's content, we know it. If there's aversion, we know that. If there's confusion, we know that. If the mind is pretty clear, we know that. If it's restless, we know that. If it's calm, we know that. And I think this is something that we're probably all somewhat familiar with, you know, as we practice with mindfulness of our emotions and thoughts. So that's the first instruction, is just to recognize our state of mind, not with the sense of needing to change anything or fix anything, but just be aware as we breathe in and out. And then the second step is to gladden the mind as we breathe in and out. And part of this might be just reconnecting with the sense of joy that we experienced earlier when we were cultivating rapture by breathing in and breathing out. It might be recognizing the beautiful mind states that we've already noticed in our minds, that mindfulness is there, that joy is there, contentment, tranquility, interest, and so on. It might also be the gladness we feel from knowing, as we've explored our mind states, that when they're difficult, we can recognize them and be with them without being overwhelmed by them. So in a way, I think this step is like noticing and cultivating that sense of sukha that we're studying this month at SIMS, a kind of a calm happiness. And then the third step is concentrating or steadying the mind as we breathe in and out. And we might do this just by paying attention to the breath, maybe by developing steady attention on changing objects, more the Vipassana style. So we notice the sensations of the breath, sensations in the body, sounds, mind states, but the attention is steady as we move from moment to moment. Or we might rest in a more spacious and receptive awareness. So whatever method we use, there's a sense of being the mind being more stable, more quiet, and more just with what is. And then the fourth step is to release or liberate the mind as we breathe in and out. So this refers to liberating or releasing the mind from the hindrances, craving, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness, worry, and doubt. So this might actually involve a feeling of actually kind of letting go, or it might be just realizing that in that particular moment, the mind is, you know, pretty free from those hindrances, that it's pretty calm, pretty contented, pretty stable, not too disturbed by anything. And it's not like a permanent liberation, but for right now, the mind is free of disturbance. And this whole sequence is really preparing the mind for going on to this fourth tetrad, where we start to look into things like impermanence, cessation, you know, the way, the truth of the way things really are. So let's give this practice a try. It's a lot, but, you know, you can get a taste. You can get a taste. So first, make sure you're sitting in a comfortable posture. And then connect with the sensations of the breath. Breathing in long, know you're breathing in long. And breathing out long, know you're breathing out long. When breathing in short, know you're breathing in short. When breathing out short, know you're breathing out short. As fully as you can, know the quality of the breath, the experience of breathing. And now, sensitive to the whole body, breathe in and breathe out. Knowing the feeling of the whole body breathing. Knowing the sensations that arise and pass in the body. Breathing in and out with those sensations. Calming the whole body. Breathe in and breathe out. as you continue to breathe in and breathe out. And you connect more and more fully to your experience of breathing, your experience of the sensations of the body. You might notice a sense of growing interest in the way the breath feels, the way the body feels. Maybe a sense of energy associated with that interest. Maybe a sense of joy just in really knowing your experience of the body and the breath, moment by moment. Or what you feel might be more a sense of just calm and contentment. Maybe there are pleasant feelings in the body itself. And be aware of that feeling tone, the pleasant. If what you're experiencing in this moment isn't so pleasant, but maybe more just neutral, or even a little unpleasant, you can notice that too. And then notice any mental formations that might be arising. If what you're experiencing is pleasant, these might be thoughts and feelings of, oh, this is nice. I like it. I want more of it. Or if your experience isn't so pleasant, maybe, I'm not feeling any pleasure or joy. What am I doing wrong? I'm not so sure I like this practice. Or it might be just the mind commenting, comparing,
throwing out random thoughts. You have a sense of what's arising. And then breathing in and out. Calm those mental formations, whatever they might be. Let them move into the background. So the mind can feel a bit of quietness and steadiness. With the breath, the body, with the present moment. And now, breathing in and breathing out, turn your attention to the mind. Notice your state of mind. If there's craving in the mind, wanting something, know that. If the mind is content and not looking for anything different, know that. If there's aversion in the mind, know that. If the mind is free of aversion and is feeling openness and acceptance to what is, know that. If there's confusion and delusion, know that. If the mind is clear, know that. If it's restless and distracted, know that. If it's calm and focused, know that. If the mind feels dull, know that. If there's energy in the mind, know that. No need to change anything or fix anything. Just recognize what's there. As you continue to breathe in and breathe out.
As you feel ready, breathing in and breathing out, gladden the mind. You might do this by returning to the simplicity of the breath and reconnecting with the calm and the joy that we were cultivating earlier. Or you might recognize and appreciate all the beautiful mind states that you were able to recognize and that might still be present in your mind. States like mindfulness, energy and interest, joy, contentment, calm and tranquility. If you've really been entangled in an especially difficult hindrance, mind state, you might offer yourself some compassion or loving kindness. Breathing in and breathing out. Gladdening the mind in the way that feels most appropriate for you. Recognizing, cultivating a sense of happiness and contentment. Knowing that if you feel confused or uncertain or not quite sure what to do, you can always stay with the simplicity of breathing in and breathing out. Calming and steadying the mind. Breathing in and out, being sure to recognize any sense of gladness, contentment that's present in the mind.
And now we move on to the next instruction. Breathing in and breathing out, we concentrate and steady the mind. Not so much trying to make the mind concentrate, but just keeping it steady on whatever is arising, and let that sense of concentration and steadiness deepen. You might do this by returning the attention just to the breath, and connecting with its sensations more and more deeply. Or instead, you might develop steady attention on changing objects. The breath, the sensations in the body, feeling tones, sounds, emotions, mind states. Just really staying steady with whatever is arising, moment by moment. Knowing it as clearly and as intimately as you can. Continuity of mindfulness. If you've been in the grip of a particular hindrance, you might bring your focused attention to that hindrance, knowing how it feels in the body, how it feels in the mind, how it changes as you observe it. Or you might allow the mind to open into a receptive and spacious awareness. So awareness itself is the object of your attention. Whichever technique works best for you, that's fine. Do that, continuing to breathe in and breathe out. In his book, Larry Rosenberg says that for this contemplation, the object of concentration isn't so important. But the aim is getting to know the mind when it's concentrated and steady, and when it isn't. So spending some time here, allowing the mind to deepen in steadiness and concentration. Finally, breathing in and breathing out, we release or liberate the mind from the hindrances. If you've been entangled in a specific hindrance, maybe caught up in wanting something different from what's happening, aversion, confusion, this might actually feel like a releasing. Letting the tightness of the body relax as you breathe in and out. Letting those thoughts that keep the anger or the craving active to fade away. Or if the mind has been in a more tranquil state, there might really not be much of a sense of releasing, but just realizing. As the mind becomes more concentrated, quieter, steadier, it just isn't being bothered by the hindrances. It's calm. It's peaceful. It's knowing the present moment. Just this, and this is enough. It is said that the nature of the mind is luminous, obscured only by visiting defilements. Perhaps you can catch a glimpse of this luminous mind.
That was a lot, I think, that we went through in these instructions. And if you felt like you didn't have enough time to really explore each of these contemplations, well, you're right. That's really the truth. This just gives a taste, a sense of it, and I encourage you to experiment with each step of the instructions at home to find the way to work with them that's best for you. You might want to spend a couple of days just working with breathing with the mind before going on to others or something like that. And as I tried to suggest in the guided meditation, you can use these instructions as a way to work with a specific hindrance you feel caught in, recognizing it. See if you can calm and soothe the mind by offering yourself compassion or loving kindness. Bringing that focused attention to it and investigate it. And then finally releasing it. Or you can use these contemplations in a broader way to understand more about the mind overall and move it toward deeper calm and concentration. And this can take some time. Larry Rosenberg said that we aren't really ready to move to gladdening the mind until we're at the point where the mind and body are pretty calm and we have some capacity to be with those difficult mind states as they arise and pass away. So that might take some time. That might take some time. So explore working with these at a pace that works for you. It's an exploration, that's for sure. It's not about getting it right, but learning. And so now I'd like to turn things over to Lauren, and Lauren, you can add anything that you might like to add about this third tetrad and practicing with the third tetrad, and then we can open the floor up to your questions and observations.
Thank you so much, Lindell, for taking us through that, all those phases. For me, it was very smooth. It just seemed to go from one to the other, a nice unfolding. So really appreciate that. So why don't we just take a moment to stretch if you'd like. You can just take a, because we're going to talk, have a little discussion now, but if you want to stand up and stretch, we've been sitting silently for a while here, and now we're in a more interactive phase. So go ahead and do that. Kind of might want to wiggle your shoulders or yawn or move a few muscles. That's good. Just transition. So, I can just start. Something that I noticed was the gladdening. So what we went through was first just being sensitive to the mind state while breathing in and out, and then gladdening. And then we went on to steadying or concentrating, and then releasing or liberating the mind from the hindrances. And what I noticed in the breathing out, in and out with the gladdening, was that I was very uncomfortable physically. I don't usually sit in this chair when I meditate. And so I had a lot of you know, muscle tension. However, because of the breathing in and out, I was connected to a pleasant, there was a pleasantness at the same time as I was feeling the difficulty with my body pains. And it enabled me to stay with the body and the breath and the pleasantness. And it seemed like they kind of worked together. And because there was unpleasantness, I felt a tenderness because it was like compassion. So I thought, oh, this is interesting. That compassion, it seemed to start as like tranquility and metta, you know, like if I stayed right with the breath, it was just tranquility and metta. But when I wanted to hold and be unified with the presence of the pain too, then there it changed to compassion. And the compassion felt tender. And that helped me have, you know, just stay. So I felt I could then ease into the concentration and the steadying because I didn't have to get, you know, there was little, I was starting to get the aversion, the, you know, I could feel it hovering around me, waiting to pounce, the aversion. So that the, what do you call it? The hindrance. But I stayed with the breathing and the tenderness, which enabled me to stay with the pain in a different way that was not disruptive. And I just found that really interesting. And then I felt when we got to concentration and steadying, you know, I felt like, yeah, I am. I didn't go away from that. You know, now I'm going in that direction. So that was just something I noticed. So I'm wondering if others would like to share what you noticed during this meditation tonight. Who would like to share something they noticed and their experience? Or you could ask a question of Bill or wonder. Great, Dragon Yogi, thank you.
My question had to do with the are we incorporating detachment? Not me, not mine, not myself. They also the three qualities, dukkha, anatta, anicca. How to incorporate them into some of these states, especially the mental states.
I think we are. The emphasis is not on them quite so much in these, because in this the fourth one, it's all about that. It's all about that. But at the same time, I think as we're exploring, we notice that. I mean, when you're looking, noticing different mind states come up and thoughts come up, I think that's always been a very powerful thing for me to see, you know, this isn't me and mine and what I am. It really is. It has that impersonal quality.
Yeah.
And I think we see that when, especially when we start to look at the mind, at least I find that that's true. So those things are definitely all part of it. And there'll be more emphasis on noticing them in the next week's instructions.
Okay. Thank you.
Shashi, go ahead.
It's Patsy this time.
Oh, Patsy, great. Go ahead.
So I'm a beginner, and one of the things that I was thinking about, I'm feeling a lot of sadness, and so I wonder if is sadness a hindrance? And, you know, because I think about this now, we're looking at this, and we're looking at rapture, and we're looking at joy, and then I wonder about emotions like sadness, you know, and feeling those. Are those, I mean, I'm just not certain how to look at that. Does that make sense? Does the question make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I I wouldn't think of sadness exactly I wouldn't think of it as a hindrance so much as just a kind of a natural response to loss. And then the hindrance more comes in when there's aversion to what's happening and you start getting angry and blaming or that kind of thing. So I would say it's just more, maybe see it just more as an emotion than a hindrance itself. What do you think, Lauren?
Yeah, I wouldn't think of it as a hindrance, but it can, if it's the attachment part where you can't let, you know, it takes your mind over. And so you're just total, you know, you just get so focused on that. So you can feel it in your body. That can help. Well, the breath and the body, like one of the instructions is to breathe through it, for example. So you breathe through the sadness, so you're not averse to it. You're aware of it. If you think about it, if you go into the thinking part, it can become more of a hindrance because it occupies your mind, gets talking about it and proliferating and stories. But if you just look at the feeling, feel the feeling.
Really? Oh,
this is, and the body can digest sadness. You know, it can work with it and make it not a hindrance. It's there, but it's real and it's to be known. So you're knowing it. And next time we'll talk about impermanence because it will change, you know, it will transform. That's my little tidbit.
Thank you. Very nice. That's helpful.
What?
I said, thank you. That's helpful.
Oh, okay. Thank you for bringing that up. Who else? Dragon Yogi.
Sorry again, but it might be helpful just to set straight what the five hindrances are.
Oh, so good point.
Yes.
Because that helps people a heck of a lot to know exactly what they are instead of not what they're not. In the emotion part of it, sadness, for me, is in the emotional category in the mental states. And again, this is where we came to, I talked about earlier, I was sharing about detachment. About not personalizing everything. When emotion comes up for me, I recognize, hey, okay, emotion's here. No matter which one it is, it's just here. Whether I ask for it or not, it's here. And the first part for me is to recognize and be aware that it's here. When the mind realizes that you're aware, it kind of slows down just a little bit on the strength of that emotion. The more we're aware of it, the less power it has. And that's easier for us to detach from. For me, I can't speak for everybody else, but easier for me to detach from emotions. Mm-hmm. But in this part of it, when we're talking the fourth or the third establishment, am I right? The mind, today's the mind.
Mm-hmm. The mind.
That third establishment is the mental states. And emotion is just another mental state. Sadness is just another mental state, and recognizing that it's here helps each time that you recognize it, for me, takes less power away from the strength from it. It's not as sad the next time it comes up each time, and we just keep doing it over and over again. The repetition really makes it less powerful for me. I can't speak for everybody, and according to what I've read too, in all the suttas and everything else. But just sharing. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I suppose I should say the five hindrances again. That's the craving, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. Those are the five.
Thank you,
Linda. Some too are explained as lust, anger. Then we move to the sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. Because the biggie one the Buddha talked about was anger. That's the biggie one.
Yeah, anger and craving.
Yeah.
I call it lusting.
Well, there's that too. You know, there's a different word. Yeah. But those are mind states too.
Yes, that's all they are.
So, yeah. And they can... Anyway, Suze. Lauren, you can go ahead.
No, that's fine. Go ahead, Suze.
I wanted to just make a comment about sadness. That I think there's also, for me anyway, an importance of just honoring that's the emotion that's there. And all that what sadness feels like in the body and mind and heart. And often there are memories that come up if the sadness is about a loss of a loved one. And just to honor it is a whole different experience for me than trying to push it away or in any way. Just, you know, it's here and it's part of, it's so natural that we would feel that way. Sometimes there's just sadness because you're out and about and there are these folks who are unsheltered and in need and you just respond that way. But I find it important to honor. And I'm not sure I would say that about all of the different emotions, but certainly those tender ones.
Thank you, Suze.
May I continue? Because I wanted to share something about
it. Yes. Oh, please do.
So, in my sit yesterday morning, there was no settledness at all in the mind. The mind didn't want to be there. The body was okay, but the mind just wanted to like go anywhere but there. And then tonight in the sit, the mind was so settled, and partly in the comparison, there was this real feeling of lightheartedness and gladness of like, oh, right, it can settle. I didn't totally lose it. You know, there was that kind of confidence, the gladness that comes from just when the mind settles. On its own, I didn't feel like I had done anything about it. It just happened. So there was a gladness that happened just in response to the fact that the mind was settled and quiet.
Thank you, Suze. It's so nice to hear everyone's different angles, you know? Oops. Anyone else? Besides my cat?
Yeah.
Judith.
I think I would have to, I had a similar feeling to what Suze just expressed, that when my mind is calm, there is that good feeling, whether it's joy or happiness or whatever it is. It just feels good, you know, by itself. And it's not, I mean, I don't even know how to cultivate gladness exactly, you know, because it seems to me it's a byproduct of being calm and settled and focused. And then there it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really true, that in a lot of ways it is a byproduct of being calm and focused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have a few more minutes. Who else would like to share? Shashi, go ahead.
I just wanted to say how much I like the guided meditation. I thought it was very good. And like you said, Lauren, it was smooth and, you know, helped take you through all the phases. And also the term, you know, to look at this as an exploration. Because for some of us, you know, who've been living, you know, sort of a small distance from our body, exploring some of this is new, but it's very invigorating. So I want to thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? Well, it sounds like then we're coming. Oh, someone has a chat. Let's just see what's there. Detachment.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Dragon Yoga. Yes, Dragon you did mention. Yeah, you mentioned that in your question. Yeah.
Yes. Not me, not mine, not myself. Dukkha, Anatta, Anitta, Anicca. We'll definitely get into that next week.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so let me see where we are here. Okay, so thank you everyone for coming tonight and for being in our Sangha, our exploratory Sangha. Mm-hmm. next Thursday, Susan Steve will teach the last set of instructions for mindfulness of breathing with the Dhammas or wisdom. And it'll be the same time, same Zoom link, and we'll send an email tomorrow with that link, along with some homework ideas, as we've done in previous weeks. There won't be a class the following week on Thursday, June 18th, because Bhante Rahula is offering a talk from 7 to 9 at Seattle Insight. It's in person and online if you'd like to attend. Registration is not required. Then our fifth and last Anapanasati class will be Thursday, June 25th, when we'll have a chance to check in and discuss the whole 16-step Anapanasati meditation practice. Steve, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if any of you are wishing you could sit with a yogi who's like uplifting or funny or vibrant, Bhante Rahula is all those three. Mm. He's quite astonishing. So it's just so natural from this guy. So I would really, really, he's just truly inspiring in an inherent way. So if you have the time, go for it.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for your enthusiasm. And I've heard that Eva made that same announcement at Monday night. So everybody's free next Thursday. So. Zoom or in person. Thank you. Okay.
Or wait, it's not next Thursday.
No, sorry.
Thursday 18th.
Yes, 18th. 18th, right. Yeah, sorry. And then, yeah, anyway, on the 25th, yeah, we'll discuss the whole Anapanasati meditation practice and have a chance to check in on how things are going. So it's kind of in summing up on that last one. And I want to remind you that Seattle Insight is an all-volunteer organization, and your generosity is deeply appreciated. You may offer Donna on our website. Any Donna we four teachers receive for teaching this class will be shared among the four of us. So thank you. And did I forget anything, Lyndall? Announcement-wise?
Were we going to ask people to send the Donna to Suze so she can
guide it. I got that. Yeah. So if you do want to send Donna to the four of us, Suze will collect it. Yeah. So.
And my Venmo is on the website underneath my picture. And it actually works. I just checked it recently. So, and then I'll share it with everybody.
That way you won't have to give this, give this, give this, give this.
That's on the donate page.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so that brings us to the close tonight, and I want to offer
one thing. Yeah. One thing. I want to reassure you that recordings are coming. I think they said at least the first one should be posted quite soon. And one thing I want to ask too, to make sure about this, we were planning on having the discussion included in the recording as they do for the talks, like the Monday night talks at Seattle Insight, because people bring up so many good comments and there's a lot to be learned there. So we just want to make sure that that's okay with people to have that in there.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Thank you, Lyndall.
Looks like, people are okay. So we'll go ahead and let Ken know that. And soon they should be there. They should be in the talk series section.
Right. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we need everybody to chime in or we forget.
Yeah.
So now we're at the dedication of merit. So if you just take a quiet space and think about the place you made in your life tonight to come to practice in the company of others of like mind. Whatever the benefits come from this practice, let it be offered for the welfare of others. And may our experience be transformed into kindness and care for the world. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings everywhere be free. Thank you. Good night, everyone. Hope to see you next week.